Right. How much does it matter getting off to a start like this one, as opposed to, say, last year where they still won the Super Bowl but kind of stumbled out of the gate?
The big advantage is for the eventual number one seed conversation, but they kind of buried that last year too, right? When it was like, well, maybe they can't win on the road or if they're not hosting the AFC title game, and they still did all those things. So, yeah, we take almost anything in Kansas City with a grain of salt from a regular season perspective. But I don't think it's nothing that they've won 9 games in a row. Final couple regular season games, all 4 in the postseason, first 3 this year, a lot of good teams. They're just better at finding ways to win than most teams. There's a reason why they've had the success they have.
Let's talk about the defense on the final couple drives for the Atlanta Falcons. What stands out to you?
Well, I think if you don't follow Kansas City regularly, which you almost can't avoid now,
right,
Steve Spagnuolo is better than almost anyone in the league at making adjustments. They got picked on a little bit in the first half, but the fact that they completely locked down Algier and Bijan Robinson was probably the biggest key to the victory on the defensive side. Obviously, Nick Bolton makes that massive fourth down stop, but without controlling the run game in general, the game could have been a bigger problem. They got, you know, Atlanta was down to backup offensive linemen, but they got a lot of pressure on Kirk Cousins in the second half, and I think it just threw the Falcons off their game.
The versatility always stands out to me about this defense. They've got a lot of veterans. They've got guys who can rush. They've got guys who will blitz if that's what he wants to do. But they've also got guys who can cover. And as much as they will give up some points and some yards, it's that bend but don't break mentality when games are on the line.
Yeah, Shamari Connor was great tonight. He was the guy who missed the tackle on Drake London that actually gave him more of a chance there in the fourth, but then he was just involved in every single play. They're using Leo Chanel versatility-wise. They're using him on offense in the red zone, or at least trying to. So they're just Brett Veach deserves a lot of credit. I think we give him a lot of credit here in Kansas City because Connor and Chanel and all these other guys they seemingly have like backfilled the roster with do a really good job. But they're also their defense works because Chris Jones is the best interior defensive lineman in the NFL. And I think Trent McDuffie is the best cover corner in the NFL. And when you've got those two positions, you can kind of build everything else you do around that.
And a real tough performance for Nick Bolton, who was also banged up.
Yeah, so he actually, I wasn't impressed by him early on this season. I remember a former Chiefs linebacker, Derek Johnson, when I was covering him in Kansas City, he had told me after coming back from injury once that the first thing, or the longest thing it takes to get back is your eyes. He's like, you're just guessing, and nothing looks right, everything looks kind of, you know, too fast. And for the first couple of weeks, it definitely felt that way with Nick Bolton. Not tonight. He was great. He was the whole key to the entire run defense we were just talking about in the earlier part. And yeah, he must have been cramping, I guess is what it was, because he is holding his back, hip area two different times in that game. Came back in at the right moment, right? He went pretty much untouched on that final stop against Bijan, but this is the best game he's had all season.
Kansas City host Cody Tapp is with us in the wake of Sunday Night Football. The Chiefs starting out 3-0, getting their first road win of the year against the Falcons. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Early interception in the end zone for Patrick Mahomes capped what was a 17-play drive. But this team so often can recover. When they're missing pieces like they are with Isaiah Pacheco, is there any team that's better at adjusting and at using other weapons? Because that always stands out to me.
I'll say this, it never looks pretty in the early going, but no, they're better at replacing them than others. Well, that was like the whole team of last season. Like, they weren't even replacing everybody, but they found out really fast they didn't have any wide receivers. And it was, well, how are you going to make this work despite that? Given enough time, they always had enough to kind of do it or figure it out. Like, you'd ask me to start 3-0. Does this mean anything in the regular season? Well, it means more if there's no Hollywood Brown. So they're missing their number two wide receiver, their number one running back. You're like, well, that's already a bad start. They've already benched their starting left tackle for the first 2 games of the season and switched over to Wanye Morris. That's not normally the recipe for an undefeated team 3 weeks into the season. So I'm always kind of impressed. I also think it helps that Rashee Rice has decided to play like a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL. Whether everyone will agree upon that at the end of the year, we'll see. But 3 games in, and he's on pace for 130 catches and 1,600 yards. I don't know if that's going to last, but at the moment, you can cover a lot of things on offense if you got one guy, doing that.
What's going on with Travis Kelce?
Okay, so I've tried to dive in. My long stance on the air has been he'll never age. Ageless man, never going to be a problem. You'll never stop him. I had stood by that for the first 2 weeks of the season. I'm going to have to evaluate a little harder maybe after this one. Patrick said after the game, and I do think that there's a big truth to this, that they're still giving him far more respect than they do Rashee Rice. So what's happening here is they're still double and triple teaming Travis Kelce, pretty much saying, we'll let anyone beat us but him. So I still think numbers are coming for him. I could be way off base here and, you know, happy to call back in later if I'm wrong. I still think he'll end up a 1,000-yard wide receiver. I just think once Hollywood went down, they're like, well, we'll just stop Travis, and especially now Pacheco's gone. We'll just stop Travis, and they won't be able to score. They weren't counting on Rashee Rice being this good. Mm. And once the league course corrects to, well, damn, we better respect Rashee Rice, then I think it's going to get a little easier for Kelce. They also just had a couple of miscommunications. Like tonight, he threw that ball towards the end zone. He thought Travis was going to go up, and instead he settled down, and that's not commonly seen between the two of them. We're almost always on the same page.
Hmm. If you had this dilemma, would you skip a sibling's wedding for work, Cody?
I don't think so. I mean, God, it's tough for Carson Steele. Because the poor guy gets told a year out, he's an undrafted free agent, he's not even guaranteed a roster spot. He probably thinks he's going to make the wedding up until, like, July 15th this year, oh. August 1st. Who knows how long he thought he was making that wedding. I think if it's his work, you don't have much of a choice. The only way I'd have to do is if I was, like, going to cover a Super Bowl or something. I think outside of that. The other question, though, is, if you're having a wedding for a family member and one of those family members has a family pet crocodile, how does that not make it to the wedding? That just feels like a near lock. I don't understand how Crocky J didn't come.
Cody Tabas with us from Kansas City. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So Patrick Mahomes is one of those guys that can do pretty much anything that's asked of him, but he has gone through some early season swoons. I guess last season it lasted for months before he was able to lock in. What have you seen from him so far?
I don't think he's looked like himself the first 3 weeks. Tonight was a really good example of that. He missed some throws, easy throws. He, again, likened it to trusting his arm more than his mechanics, but, like, there were some throws tonight that you're like, oh, Patrick, no. And it's three straight games with a pick that you're like, oh, no, don't throw that.
Right.
The one tonight where Justin Simmons grabbed it, the one to Travis Kelce last week, and in the first week he threw a really bad pick, too. So you're like, it's not common to see 3 weeks into the season for him to have 200 yards a game passing and more or just as many, I guess, interceptions as he has touchdowns. I think it's off probably because this is the second straight year that they're having to, like, refine themselves offensively. It's new left tackle now, obviously, new weapons. I know it's Rashee Rice and Kelce, but all the other wide receivers and the roles inside of that are changing again, and I just don't think he's found a comfort in it. Tonight is a really interesting case study in it because it's not like it still doesn't work in any way. Tonight, I would liken the offense to they both seemed discombobulated or out of rhythm, but they also moved the ball incredibly well. You mentioned they had a 17-play drive. They scored on a 13, 11, and 11-play drive. So it's not like they never moved the ball, but something still feels like a hair off. I view this team more as if it clicks for a week or two, they'll hammer some teams. If it all just kind of lines up, but it just hasn't done that for 3 weeks.
They've gotten these three wins by a combined 13 points. And even going back to the final six games of last year, they weren't blowing teams out. Why are they so confident in games that are close and late?
Okay, so they've won nine straight games by a combined 54 points.
Whoa.
That is the lowest amount of points anyone has had a 9-0 stretch in NFL history. So you're not wrong in saying these games seem close. I think there's two reasons behind it. One is what you're seeing tonight. We talk about the offense, right? They had a chance to go up two scores tonight. They got the ball, 5 minutes to go. Go down, score a touchdown, end it, and it's over. And they have an uncharacteristically bad success rate in those moments. I can't tell you how many times. It feels like 50 in the last two seasons where they could just go down, score a field goal or a touchdown, essentially put the complete back against the wall of the team where they have no chance to win it because it's two scores, and they never seemingly score in that situation. The other thing is, like it or not, despite pass or run stuff, in scoring situations, Andy Reid is a He's top five in most conservative coaches. He had a fourth and two today. He kicked a field goal. He had a fourth and one last week on the 1 yard line. Kicked a field goal. He is team take the points. Whether you like it or not, and I tend to think that he could be more aggressive in those situations, he's team take the points. And so what happens is tonight, had they, gone for a fourth down and turned one of those into a touchdown, well, then it's not a one possession game. They don't put themselves in harm's way. And I think because they're winning doing it that way, it's hard for Andy to justify making the switch. Like you're saying, why confident? Because the result's the same. At the end of the day, they get to stop against the Falcons and they win the game. So I think they have a hard time being like, well, I should change the way I live. Why? If the result is always winning.
It's easier to be team take the points when you have an automatic kicker like Harrison Butker.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. I don't know why I'm giving you the stats tonight. The funniest stats, he's missed 19 extra points in his career. He's only missed four kicks of 40 or less in, like, real kicks. Why the hell do you always miss extra points? No, he's the most automatic kicker in the league. Justin Tucker, there's something wrong there, no matter what. I don't know what's going on there. But even before that, Harrison Butker's been the best kicker in the league for, like, I don't know, 18 months. And in a league where 50-yard field goals seemingly go in every time, even more so for him. I think they were dead serious about maybe having him try a 67-yarder last week. And I think if there were 4 seconds left on the clock before half, they would have. So, yeah, I think, Andy, it's by nature a take-the-points guy. But I think you got Harrison Butker. You're probably never going to not take him.
Cody Tapp is with us following Sunday Night Football here at After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Let's talk about the AFC West, because the Chiefs have their next game against the Chargers, who did fall on Sunday. What are your impressions of the division at this point?
They've taken over Harbaugh's personality, which I thought was like a really good sign for them. I think the Broncos are a joke. I'm glad they won today or whatever. It's fine. I don't take them seriously at all. It's even take the Raiders even less serious than I did last week after they fell to the Panthers. So hard to care about them. The Chargers were the only real competition, and I thought that that was a year too early to even entertain that. And then they're making Chargers-like mistakes. It was foolish to have Herbert play today, because you knew you had the Chiefs at home. That is a far more valuable game. Losing to the Steelers in week 3 doesn't mean anything, but if you get your quarterback in a boot and maybe he's not available for Sunday or limited again for next Sunday, you've made a huge mistake. I think they're going to end up going 6-0 in this division. I don't think it's going to be close. I think they'll win the division again. I think next year we can have a real conversation about the Chargers. But until the Broncos or the Raiders figure out quarterback, they're going to be nowhere near this thing.
Last Christmas, when the Raiders beat the Chiefs, one of the things that Antonio Pierce said is, we figured out how to defend Patrick Mahomes. Here's a blueprint. And we know they didn't lose again. The Chiefs won the Super Bowl in Vegas and, of course, have started out now with 3 wins. Looking back on that moment, how is that a turning point for Kansas City?
I think that, in a way, they had just accepted their identity after that game. That was obviously the worst loss they've had in years. But they accepted who they were, which was, Rashee Rice is our best weapon right now, and we're going to have to grind out ugly wins in which, what we just talked about, take the points as part of it. I think it helped them understand who they were. What they're doing to the Chiefs is what's happening league-wide. I think it's why scoring is way down. I think we're just in one of those swells where defenses are winning against offenses right now, and until everybody kind of reconfigures what works against this style of defense, Pierce wasn't wrong in a lot of ways. Where they did slow him down and frustrate him, I just think that the mistake people make against Patrick Mahomes is when they get that little edge, like they get him for just 1 minute. I think it was Shea Serrano is actually a good credit for. He's a writer. He writes a bunch of different stuff. He had sent out a tweet once which kind of perfectly encapsulates the mistake people make against Patrick Mahomes, which is, you can beat him. You can beat him in an individual game. The one mistake you don't want to make is then also pissing him off, because then he'll want to rip your head off. Once you do that to him, once you like, oh, we figured him out, well, now he's just a man possessed, and you've opened this door to, like, he'll do it over my dead body stuff. And I think that's a lot what you see when teams finally figure him out for a little bit. He'll still drag them across the finish line, no matter what it takes.
Cody, this has nothing to do with football, but did you actually do the hot dog derby at a game last week?
Sadly, and here's the bad news. I think I'm barreling towards, and I've yet to find the stat line, I'm barreling towards a world record. I have now raced in 4 hot dog derbies at the Royal Stadium. 4. I am 0-4. I finished second twice. There's only three people. Third twice. I can't win the thing. This most recent one, I was up against a former U.S. men's national team member, Matt Beisler. So, like, I had no chance. There was no way unless he fell, I was winning the race. But in the other ones, man, I had a chance and I blew it.
Can you see out of that hot dog suit?
Only kind of. No peripheral vision. And then depending on how fast you try to run, your vision straight ahead is a challenge too. They're just not, no arm movement. They cut you off at the legs. It's not like a normal run. If anybody ever gets it, I got plenty of other words of advice, even though I haven't won it. I can tell you the things to avoid that apparently I've done wrong.
You've got to find some of the videos and GIFs that are up. So you can find him at Cody B. Tapp, TAPP. He's the host of Cody and Gold on 96.5 The Fan in Kansas City. And the Chiefs off to a 3-0 start, even if he can't win a hot dog derby. Cody, thank you so much.
Of course, thanks.